And I think we're joined by David Heap. Are you there, David?
Here I am.
Well, I'm missing your dad as I speak of this, because, of course, this is your dad would have had a lot to say about this marking the beginning of World War One, he was a great peace advocate, and of course, people know you. You have yourself now a great career in struggling for peace and justice in the Middle East with GazaArc.org. And you, like many Canadians, have been struck by the silence of elected leaders, and of course, your history. And your father is with the NDP. Your father was a great member from Spadina. You received from the NDP a letter saying it's time for everybody to come to the table and support the party with money. But you say, and they say that the clock is ticking. You say that's true, but there's another thing ticking. Can you pick it up at that point? Why did you write this letter?
Well,
found at your blog.
The party sends these fundraising messages with increasing frequency, but they have to get me at a particularly sensitive time. And what I wrote to them is that I couldn't hear their incessant pleas for money over the wailing of the fathers and the mothers of Jabalia camp, who and elsewhere, yeah, all the people that have lost their families and loved ones and friends and neighbors and colleagues in the last 3 weeks of yet another Israeli aggression, which, you know, we certainly haven't ended all war, and we certainly haven't ended that war. The fact that the NDP has lined up so closely with the Liberals and the Conservatives on this really means that there's no federal party, no party in our federal parliament that Canadians can support if they believe in a human rights-based, a peace-based approach to foreign policy. You know, there's barely daylight anymore between Mulcair and Trudeau and Harper. Mm-hmm. The only difference is how loud they're cheerleading for Israeli war crimes. I mean, Harper and Baird are probably among the most unabashed cheerleaders in the world, mm-hmm, for Israeli crimes against Palestinians, and Trudeau and Mulcair are a little bit more muted, but they're all saying, you know, Israel has the right to do this to Palestinians in the name of self-defense, ignoring the fact that in international law there's actually very strict conditions on self-defense. None of which, of course, Israel complies with. The idea of using force for self-defense isn't an unconstrained right in international law.
Yeah.
So we're not hearing any of that about the application of international law, which really leaves people, a growing number of people in Canada, with no place to turn in terms of federal politicians. It's really quite sad.
Yeah, you point out that, and some of us are starting to notice it in other countries of the world with which Canada has very good relations, there's a different political environment. Actually, Mr. Miliband, who hadn't been very good, did finally make a statement saying that this was, I forget his phrase, but he clearly took a stand against, well, I think it was, he decided it was the incursion, the actual crossing of into Gaza by the Israeli army. But he said, can't be done. This has got to be stopped.
Yeah. But everybody has different lines, of course. The many states in South America, which have their own experience with foreign intervention, violent foreign intervention, have taken the strongest stances, in fact, and recalled their ambassadors and broken relations in different ways with the Israeli state. But even in other parliamentary democracies, as you say, in the UK and Australia, which sort of resemble our system, people in the sister parties of the NDP, you know, other social democratic parties like the Labour Party in Britain, or the Labour Party in Australia, or even Liberal parties, Liberal Democrats, Green parties, and people like that, are taking a stand, and their caucus doesn't enforce, their leaders don't enforce a single point of view on this issue. And there's a very strange uniformity in what the statements that Canadian, yes, MPs are allowed to make. I mean, yeah, we know that Harper controls his caucus with an iron hand, but we also know that there are some other NDP MPs who would take a firmer stand if they could. But the margin of dissent is defined as very narrow. I mean, this is an old concept from Chomsky in the 60s, that the margin of dissent about the Vietnam War, you were allowed to say, you know, kill the Vietnamese faster or more slowly, or maybe don't let so many American boys die in Vietnam, but you weren't allowed to say the war is wrong. Mm-hmm. Right, so we get this margin of dissent effect where they can have nuances of the same thing, but they're all basically behind the Israeli war machine, and nobody in our federal parliament, at least, seems to be allowed to say it's all wrong, and they shouldn't be. The world has to hold them accountable to the same international law as everybody else. Whereas in Britain, you'll have people in Parliament saying, these are war crimes. Not everybody says it, but some of them say it. More than a dozen MPs from all three parties, actually, were making that call. And we don't hear that at all in North American politics. Yes. We don't hear that in Canadian politics, which is really quite sad, as I say, because there's this growing sector of the electorate which needs to hear that, which is looking for that kind of leadership and not finding it in a federal parliament at all.
Yeah, and incidentally, you point out in your letter that even some Democrats in the U.S. have actually spoken up or taken different positions. They've actually walked in there and voted differently. I think seven members of Congress, maybe five, something like that. But frankly, that's pretty loud, given the fact that they were previously silent.
Yep, if U.S. Democrats are out ahead of the NDP, we really have to give our head a shake. The NDP in Canada, we really have to give our head a shake.
Yeah.
I mean, they can say that, well, maybe they shouldn't bomb U.S. schools. This is their version of don't kill them quite so quickly, right? Kill them more slowly.
Mm-hmm.
But Baird won't even say that. You know, he won't even follow UN Human Rights Commission's counsel for an investigation under international law, which is, you know, the minimum. Even if you believe there's wrong on both sides and fault on both sides, international law and investigation by independent human rights commission, that would be a way to sort it all out and mete out blame and responsibility and accountability where it's due. Mm-hmm. We're not even hearing that from our politicians. So our call is really for the application of international law, and we're still waiting to hear politicians who line up for that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's taken different kinds of direct action to get there. I mean, you probably heard last Thursday there was an occupation of Paul Doerr's office. He's the NDP foreign affairs critic in Ottawa. Unlike some conservative members, he actually came and spoke to the occupiers, and they, you know, they call themselves voters for Gaza, because that's, you know, people who believe in Palestinian rights are voters in this country too. There's a Facebook page and a little WordPress site and stuff like that, and they're publishing letters are actually pouring in from different parts of the country, and people are pissed off about this. Everywhere. Montreal, which is where Mulcair's writing is too, people are pretty pissed off that they're not hearing something about the responsibility for these acts.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that as a result of what happened last Thursday, Paul Doerr actually moved a meter forward in his statement on Friday and actually admitted for the first time that there weren't just civilian deaths, there were civilian deaths caused by Israeli bombing. And up until Friday, he hadn't even named who was responsible for the civilian deaths.
Yeah,
so it's making microscopic progress. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it is progress, by the way. And by the way, I think it's a lot to do with, we have, Canada's a very sophisticated political culture. People know the reality. They are watching. And there is a real agony and unhappiness that they can't find anyone to speak up. By the way, we're speaking to David Heap, and it's GazaArc.org, and the letter we're addressing, davidheap.blogspot.ca, you can find that letter. One of the things I noticed in the initial statement, the one that I was seeing to come from Mr. Mulcair, started off with Hamas is a terrorist organization, and we've been found to be such, as though somehow that was like a Trump card that we weren't supposed to proceed beyond that. But I'm thinking back to leadership of Jack Layton, and I hate to make invidious comparisons here, but Jack Layton suggested in Afghanistan that, yes, you have an entity called the Taliban. He said, why don't you talk to them? And if you were going to save lives and bring him peace, and they called him Taliban Jack. And, you know, he got where he could wear that hat quite comfortably, because then the government and U.S. eventually said, yeah, maybe that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, what why not? Why do they have to try to start putting an obstacle like that there? Isn't Hamas part of a united government at the moment with the Palestinian Authority?
Yeah, with the Fatah. They're in the unity government with the Palestinian Authority. And they were recognized by a number of world powers, including the U.S. as part of this unity government. And I think if you strip away the pretext and the rhetoric, this is what really has Israel upset, the war hawks in Israel, is that people are finally going to talk to a relatively unified Palestinian leadership. And maybe, heaven forfend, they will have an election and have a really representative Palestinian leadership who can negotiate or not in the name of the Palestinian people. But because, of course, they're doing very well with these fake negotiations with people who don't really have a mandate, and they spin it out and they occupy more land. So this is what the attacks really are about, of delegitimizing Hamas. But if we want to talk about terrorists, many of the politicians in Israel, especially in the early decades, had an illustrious career as terrorists against the Brits, against Palestinians, and the IDF is arguably state terrorism. And people who steal ships at sea is, you know, this is the least of their crimes in terms of state piracy. But what they do to Palestinian civilians day in, day out, year in, year out, decade after decade, I think matches the international law definition of terrorism very well. Mm-hmm. But the point is, if you speak to the people who are doing this, you're never going to make peace. So I think you need to speak to Israeli terrorists, and you need to speak to other terrorists if you're going to find a way out of the solution. And you need to apply the same standards of international law to them all.
Yeah, and now, also, you point out that within our culture, there are also, they're internationally respected groupings, for example, Medecins Sans Frontières, the Red mm-hmm. Cross. Why can't the health critic for the NDP say, look, these agencies, quite credible, are making these statements, and we are concerned, and we want action?
Yeah. So if the International Committee of the Red Cross or Doctors Without Borders are saying there's evidence of violations of international law, possibly evidence of war crimes, these need to be investigated, and the politicians can't say that, there's this disconnect between the politicians and their, what should be their portfolios. And similarly, some Canadian labor organizations, the Ontario Federation of Labor, the Confédération des Syndicats Nationaux, the CSN in Quebec, their labor leaders are saying, hey, wait a second, this is bad for workers in Palestine, it's bad politics. And they're making statements about, attributing blame where it should be attributed and accountability, calling for accountability. And again, the NDP should be lining up with its traditional allies in organized labor in this country, and they're distancing themselves from those positions. So it's quite quite distressing in terms of the constituencies that one historically would have expected the NDP to speak to. Yeah. But you're quite right about the Canadian populace, and this is what I always find heartening. While our politicians are sort of drifting into this this tighter and tighter mass on the right of the political spectrum, when you go around them and you go around the media lies and you actually speak to people, you find that, a lot of Canadians have a very decent reaction to this and say, no, one of the most powerful militaries in the world shouldn't be bombarding one of the most populous, densely populated parts of the world in this fashion. And what we found here in London, mm-hmm. not necessarily the most radical city in the country.
Nope.
When we did a vigil on Saturday night and simply named the dead, 2.5 hours to name all of the people who died in Gaza to that point. There were 1,600 or 1,700 at that point.
Wow.
More by the end, less at the beginning. It's a long process. Mm-hmm. People were coming to the park for a music festival. Ribs, it's called ribs, sort of loud music. Not necessarily the crowd that you would have normally thought would be attracted to this. People were really moved. Some mm-hmm. people just walked off. Enough people were moved that the organizers of the festival came to us and said, we want you to have a booth for the remaining 2 days of the festival.
Wow.
So we've been scrambling, sending money to keep this booth staffed with people. And we ran out of petitions. So when you caught me earlier, I was running home to get more petitions printed to bring back to people want to sign letters. They want to call on their government to take a stand, as I say, based in international law and human rights. Mm-hmm. And we can't even keep up with the demand.
Yeah.
So it's...
But by the way,
it's heartening that's where people's heart is. It's disheartening that the politicians have their heads someplace else.
Yeah, yes, from our program, we have people call and say, "Well, when is there going to be a demonstration?" They know somehow. They all intuitively know there's got to be something, and the demonstrations both in Montreal and Toronto, mm-hmm. I know, are much larger than they've been in a long, long time.
Very large,
and they're very focused. They understand what this is about. And frankly, the quality of the slogans and the thing and the speaking matches the depth of the crisis. There's some really outstanding people. We're speaking to David Heap. And by the way, this letter, it can be found at davidheap.blogspot.ca. Really, everybody should read it. It's very eloquent, very well-stated letter. And of course, David is active with GazaArk.org. Now, by the way, Gaza Arc has once again has been damaged in this process, right?
More than damaged. There's very little boat left. It was hit by a shell and up in flames.
By the way, isn't there supposed to be some accounting? We talk about Secretary of State Kerry was caught on mic saying precision. I mean, was it a precision hit on a Gaza arc? What is the excuse for that? Is that a terrorist boat? Are you transporting weapons?
Yeah, this is a boat that was hauled up being repaired from an act of sabotage in April when there was a small bomb placed on it and blew a hole in it. But we just about got that prepared, and we were ready to sail in September with a very, very, very dangerous contraband cargo of date products and couscous and embroidery from women's cooperatives in the refugee camp. Mm-hmm. Stuff that's definitely going to pose a security threat to one of the largest military organizations in the world. But, of course, they can't tolerate. This is the problem. They can't tolerate the threat of a peaceful example. The idea that Palestinians can and should and must have a sovereign, independent, autonomous peaceful economy, is scary to them, because if they can ship through their own territorial waters to international waters, that means they also should control the ocean floor of the Mediterranean, which happens to have over 1 trillion cubic meters of natural gas, which could also be a game changer for the Palestinian economy. Mm-hmm. So in the context of this general assault on Palestinians in Gaza, what are we up to, 1,800 or 2,000 deaths now and many thousands injured, we don't want to overplay the fact that, this is a boat. It's a boat that represents the hard work and solidarity of people from all over the world. Trade unionists in Norway to community groups in South Africa and Australia, throughout Europe and North America. This is the solidarity and love of all these people who wanted to build the boat because they believed in the economy of Palestine exporting this way. They had paid for goods, almost $25,000 worth of goods to export, more than $300,000 raised. This was an international solidarity campaign of some size that we're a part of here in Canada, but it's not a human life. And the important thing is we evacuated the port of our personnel and our security guards and the workmen who were on it because it was just too dangerous. Mm. The Port Authority told us they couldn't defend it. In fact, when it was hit by this incendiary shell, and we have an eyewitness who saw the shell come from the sea, from where the Israeli Navy is, the occupation Navy, the civil defense firefighters couldn't even get into the port. There was so much live fire. So it was definitely targeted for destruction. But, when you think of people losing their clinics and their schools and their mosques and their... My colleagues at the university saw the Islamic University of Gaza destroyed for the second time the other day. A place of learning shelled, hospitals shelled. There were human shields trying to defend a hospital with invalids who couldn't be evacuated. Mm-hmm. In the context of all of that destruction, we are simply happy that there was no human life lost at the Ark. I'd love to tell you the future of the project. It's something we will be studying with our Palestinian partners in Gaza after this horror ends. And wow. We really have to first... We've stopped raising funds. We've stopped everything else. We're simply concentrating on, end the massacre... start looking seriously at accountability under international law. Mm. Start looking at sanctions and an embargo of Israel, because this is a terrorist army that's terrorizing a civilian population.
Yeah, no, they have crossed the line, and there's around the international community, there's supposed to be a consequence for that. And
exactly.
Some places there are. It seems to depend upon whether you're a friend of the Washington government or not. But I want to ask, too, about, I think it galled many people that several MPs decided to visit Israel. But at this point, this type of crisis, the Canadian people ought to be asking, how about somebody visiting Gaza?
Exactly.
And by the way, I would put the Gaza Boat Project on one of the places to go see. Here's Canadians working to bring peace and to try to help the economy of the Gazans, which is basically no economy. And... no member of parliament wants to go there? Someone told me that Lizzie Davies was the last one to come and see you.
Libby was in Gaza before this project, but she was on a delegation there with a liberal member from Etobicoke whose name escapes me. No, and a Bloc Québécois member. But that was a bunch of years ago. That was after...
But here they are the target.
Exactly.
And, so, and MPs can go with a straight face and come back and not even go and knock on the door of Gaza and say, could I get some information or could I have a look around?
No, it's very sad. And before this happened, again, there have been parliamentary delegations which visit or at least try to visit from European countries. Mm-hmm. The Irish and the Scandinavians have a much more mainstream concern, let's put it this way, for the human rights of Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
But that's in large part because they've been working for many years to change the consensus in civil society. I mean, I always say it's not because they have better politicians. They elect better politicians because people demand it. And the politicians will move to that when we demand it.
Yeah.
So the place you can look for my letter, I mean, you're very kind in citing it, but look for Voters for Gaza.
Voters for Gaza.
Number 4 Gaza, which has, I think they posted my letter and other information about calling for some serious accountability from Canadian politicians. Because this is bigger than, you know, my letter or a couple people's letters to their MPs or to federal leaders. This is, as I say, it's a real gap in the Canadian political spectrum. And even from the point of view of, you know, cynical electoralism, people who want to get elected. I mean, I understand that. I've been around people who are concerned about getting elected.
You're related to some people who got elected.
Yeah. It's you know, it's important to political parties. Mm-hmm. They're missing out on a growing sector of the Canadian population who is motivated to look for a political party, not that we'll be biased and take a side and say, you know, Palestine is right or wrong, but simply that we'll say we're interested in a human rights international foreign policy which is informed by human rights and international law.
Yes.
And we're not getting that from any of the federal parties.
Yes, and there's many would like to vote for that.
Even from the electoralist point of view, this doesn't make sense. But quite apart from the principle of the matter, which is that, you know, you need to stand for human rights.
Yes, I agree. That's why I cited Jack Layton. Many people said, oh, Jack has now made a stupid mistake. He never should have said talk to the Taliban. But he was saying this is how you bring peace. Why not?
Yep.
And then, you know, it wasn't that long later, people remembered that. And he did very well in the next election.
Mm-hmm.
And, for some, that was the only thing they could remember he had said. And that was... It did him very good.
There will be a short-term price. You know, we know that the corporate media, unlike your radio show, unlike the independent media, the corporate media will chime in on the Harper Krebs chorus of saying, oh, these people are terrorist supporters, they're anti-Semitic. All the predictable charges will come out.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, so what? If you simply say, no, we stand with independent Jewish voices in Canada, we stand with anti-Zionist Jews the world over, who are calling for justice for Palestinians, not out of any kind of partiality, but simply out of a love of human rights and an understanding that the post-World War II slogan of never again meant never again for anybody, and that no people should be subjected to this kind of abuses.
Right.
And that's a principle that can only bring credibility and ultimately political success to
Absolutely.
The politicians who have the courage to weather that short-term pain of people calling you names. But you know what? In public life, people call you names. People call me names all the time.
Yeah, ordinary Canadians are familiar with that. last thing, by the way, now that we're speaking to David Heap, I want to remind you that. And we, of course, everybody keeps thinking, well, this can't go on. Now, I saw a comment by a former high-ranking Israeli official, I think Mr. Levy. He was one of the people who arranged the negotiations with the Palestinian Authority. Seems to have a lot of credibility, and he's being interviewed today. I found him on Mondo Weiss. He's points out that this has got to end the way this will only end with the ending the blockade.
Absolutely.
And matter of fact, he's calling for a port. He says they have to be able to live and breathe. And so the idea that they're not shooting at each other, that is not a solution, right?
No. A ceasefire is not peace. And peace can only come with justice and respect for fundamental rights. One of those fundamental rights, and it's not me saying, this is the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, is freedom of movement. Freedom to move around your country and freedom to leave and return to your country. That sounds trivial to us because we can do that all the time. But for Palestinians, it's not true. Their freedom of movement has been, you know, abused and under attack for many years, and very seriously in the last, 7 or 8 years in Gaza, but you know, throughout Palestine. So I'm going to look for the what you're describing on the list this evening, because this is exactly what we need to hear. And in fact, at the time of Cast Lead, Ephraim Halevi said the same thing, that if they want the missiles to stop in Israel, and this is not a Palestinian sympathizer, if we're talking about the same person. This is somebody who's you know, dedicated his career to the security of Israelis. He says the way to get security for Israelis is to give them freedom of movement of the blockade. And the message we're tweeting out with our allies in the States, in Gaza, and internationally, is end Gaza blockade in Cairo, meaning the negotiations that are going on in Cairo for a ceasefire have to include a lifting of the blockade. They were supposed to at the 2012 ceasefire, but of course, Israel immediately violated the conditions of that ceasefire, and there was no accountability for the violation.
And all of us...
The Palestinians who are resisting this assault can't go back to the status quo, which was, you know, a slow death instead of a fast death. They have to go back. They have to go forward. We all have to go forward to something which can be a lasting peace, as you say, a port so that they don't depend on any of their neighbors. You can put in all the European or international inspection you want, but they need to be able to trade and travel to the world like any other people who have a coast.
Yeah. Well, the Gaza Arc, that's the place to learn about all those things, about how they could live and thrive, and I hope your work does. David Heap, we're really grateful that you took the time to talk to us, and we look forward to talking to you in the future, and we're going to get this blockade ended. So thank you very much.
I hope so, Phil. I hope to talk to you about that.
Oh, hey, I like, by the way,
stick with it.
You signed your letter. I got to tell everybody, you signed your letter sincerely and persistently. Good for you.
Yeah.
We'll see you later then. Thank you.
Take care, Phil. Always good to speak to you.
Yeah, nice talking to you. Bye-bye. And you're listening to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and you can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. We're also Facebook / The Taylor Report. There must be some other things I could say about how to reach us, but anyhow. And, of course, I think I've told you, we're going to be talking to David Jacobs. We're going to take a brief break. I think we're going to hear something called 500 Miles, which is being played a lot in Scotland. We'll come back and we'll talk to David Jacobs.